Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. This morning, let's find 1 Samuel chapter 21. And after you find that, if you want to locate Psalm 57, we're going to kind of read a verse or two or three out of Psalm 57 as well this morning, as we continue working our way through 1 Samuel. Today we'll look at all of verse 20, chapter 21, and the first five verses of chapter 22. Today we begin what many scholars and authors on 1 Samuel consider the wilderness journey of David. Now, David will be in the literal wilderness, but not the entire time, as we'll see this morning. David will do some journeying here, there, and yonder. I've actually got a map that Mercedes helped me create this week. She's awesome, by the way. She keeps me and Logan, in line. Thank you, Holly. On track, on point, many times. So, anyway, I couldn't figure out how to work my technology, and she said, oh, do this, and boom, there it was. Anyway, you can tell her thank you later. All right, so today we're going to walk through these verses and kind of at the end draw a few points. I'll be honest with you, I may say this again later, the points that we're going to draw out today are not deeply theological, but they are hopefully very practical. And so, again, they'll serve kind of as the main idea of the story, and then as our kind of application as well. All right, let's begin. We'll read the first nine verses. Then David came to Nob, and Ahimelech the priest. And Ahimelech came to meet him trembling and said to him, why are you alone and no one with you? And David said to Ahimelech the priest, the king has charged me with a matter and said to me, let no one know anything of the matter which I send you and with which I have charged you. I have made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place. Verse 3. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me five loaves of bread or whatever is here. So what's David want? Want food. All right. And the priest said to David, I have no common bread here. Now we're going to talk about this, okay? So just hang with me. But there is holy bread, if the young men have kept themselves from women. Okay? And David answered the priest, that's Ahimelech, truly women have been kept from us as always when I go on an expedition. The vessels of the young men are holy even when it is an ordinary journey. How much more today will their vessels be holy? So the priest gave him the holy bread, for there was no bread there but the bread of the presence, which is removed from before the Lord and to be replaced by hot bread on the day it is taken away. Now there's a certain man, now you're going to need to remember this guy, okay? So just put a pin in him, put a note in him. And now there's a certain man, the servants of Saul, was there that day detained before the Lord. His name was Doeg the Edomite, the chief of Saul's herdsmen. Verse 8. Then David said to him, like, then have you not here a spear or a sword at hand? For I have brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste. And the priest said, the sword of, oh, look who it is, Goliath, the Philistine, whom you struck down in the valley of Elah. Behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take it, for there is none but that here. And David said, there is none like that, clearly, because the thing was huge. Give it to me. All right, so that's first part of the story. All right, so let's go back out of chapter 21 into chapter 20 just for a minute. What happened last week? Saul, if you weren't here, let's recap really quickly. If you were, let's jog our memories. Saul tried to kill David not once, not twice, but three times, all in the span of about 24 hours. And so David ends up going to his best friend Jonathan's house, or finds Jonathan, and Jonathan and David come up with this plan to test Saul to see if Saul is really trying to kill David. Obviously he is, but Jonathan is not aware of all of these things that have happened. And so they set up this plan, and David misses a couple meals, and Saul's anger grows so greatly that he tries to kill his own son, Jonathan. And then Jonathan and David meet up, and they share gestures of friendship and kindness and honor and deference, and then they depart. And they'll, as we said last week, they'll only see each other one more time before Jonathan dies in battle in a few chapters from now. And so David is on the run. He's basically homeless, right? He is running, as we'll see, from city to city. Now, he goes to Nob. Now, Nob, and this will make more sense in just a minute. Nob is about 2 miles north of Jerusalem and about 3 miles southwest of where Samuel lived in Ramah, and about the same distance east of where Jonathan was in Gibeah. It's kind of this all in this little area. And so Jonathan, or David, was in Gibeah. That's where Saul tried to kill him the first time. Then he went to Ramah, so it's kind of like, well, this way for y'all, here. And then he went back to Gibeah to see Jonathan, and then he went to Nob over here, and in a minute he's going to go somewhere else, right? So he's kind of, they're all kind of in this little triangle together. And he finds Ahimelech. Now, Ahimelech is a priest. Nob is, remember, just a little bit away from Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is not the capital of Israel at this point, okay? But it will be. But he's a priest. That means he serves the people and serves the Lord in the tabernacle complex, in the tabernacle. And so David runs there. Now, why is Ahimelech afraid when David shows up? Well, number one, because he knows who David is. Number two, he might have heard about Saul's interactions with David, and he knows David is a great warrior, right? So again, why are you showing up here by yourself? What's going on, right? And so David, notice David's words. Ren, pull back up verse number 2. Notice David's words. Now this is clever. Notice David's words. When Ahimelech says, "Hey, bud, what you doing here?" David says, "And the king has charged me with the matter." So who charged him with the matter? Does he say Saul? If it was Saul, why wouldn't he say King Saul? Ah, this is a creative use of language here. Because David does not identify which king sent him on a mission. Right? Now, we'll see later how this plays out in, well, sort of in Ahimelech's favor and sort of not. Right? But it does give Ahimelech what's called plausible deniability. You know, that's the stuff when the president said, "Well, I don't know what they did." Right? "I just told the general to go take care of it. Did we bomb them? Oh, I have no idea." It's called plausible deniability, right? So, who is David referring to? If it was Saul, he would have said King Saul. But there's another king that David also, there's another person that David also refers to as king a lot, especially in the Psalms. Who is it? Who is it? Don't overthink it. God, yes. Ah, right? Clever. Take some brain power to think, like David in the moment, because obviously Ahimelech's going to think, who sent him on a mission? Saul. But did Saul send him on a mission? No. What is he doing from Saul? Running. Right? So David is being very cunning, very clever, in saying that God, without saying God, has sent him on a mission. Now, what's the mission? Save my life. Run from Saul. Right? Save me, O Lord. Right? That is the mission. Get out of here as far away as I can. Right? So now let's talk about this thing. What does David want? He asked for two things. What are the two things? Bread and weapons. Right? Bread and a sword, bread and weapons. All right? So let's talk about this bread, because it's really confusing. All right? At least for us who are not Old Testament people. Right? So David asked for bread, and Ahimelech says, there's no common bread, but there's holy bread. So what's the difference between common bread and holy bread? All right, well, it's very simple. Holy bread is explained in verse number 6. Ren, throw back up verse number 6 for us. Verse number 6, it says it's called bread of the presence. Now, what is that? Bread of the presence is bread that was specifically made for the tabernacle function. It was bread that was made regularly. And remember, the tabernacle, like the temple later, has layers of holiness and layers of separation. And so this bread would be put in what was called the holy place. It's where the different other articles that you can go read about in Exodus, where God tells Moses how to make all of this stuff. It's like where the menorah, the candelabra thing, that's the Jewish symbol. It's where that's at. There's other things that are in there. There's incense, a bowl that is continually burning incense. And it's like, if you're looking at it from top-down view, it's like this little square. And then right behind it is the Holy of Holies, which is where the Ark of the Covenant is. And so regularly, priests would bake unleavened special bread, and they would put it in the holy place. And then when it was time to take it out, they would take it out, and they would put new bread in. And so the question is, okay, well, what do they do with the bread that's taken out? Well, normally, traditionally, it would be for the priests to eat. So Ahimelech is a what? Priest. So he has access to the holy, special bread of the presence. After it served its purpose in the tabernacle, the priests take it, and they traditionally would eat it for consume it themselves. But in this scenario, certain Old Testament laws, if there was a greater need of life, basically, then some of those laws could be tweaked a little bit. For example, by the time Jesus is walking, so this is, you know, a long time later, but by the time Jesus is walking, you know, there were rules for Sabbath day, right? No work could be done on the Sabbath day, right? Well, what if you had sinned greatly and you needed to make an offer of a sacrificial offering for that on the Sabbath day? Well, Jewish leadership, the law was tweaked slightly and said, okay, priests can offer sacrifices for sins on the Sabbath day. If you had a baby, and you had a baby boy, and the circumcision day fell on a Sabbath day, priests were allowed to do that, right? Because those were weightier concerns than these others. And so Ahimelech makes a judgment. Since he's a priest, he can do this. He makes a judgment and said, David's life and whatever mission the king has sent him on is more important that he have this bread than he not have anything at all. And so Ahimelech says, hey, you can have the bread. He puts one stipulation, is that David and his men need to be as holy as they can be. Now, normally priests had this laundry list of things that they would have to do to keep them holy before the Lord. Well, Ahimelech knows that David and his men, they can't do everything that he's required to do. So he says, hey, can they just be as holy as they can, i.e., can they just abstain from sexual contact? And David says, yes, that's what we always do. And so Ahimelech gives him the bread, and David takes it. And then David says, hey, do you have any weapons? I had to leave so quickly that I left all of mine. And lo and behold, the sword of Goliath is there. And so David says, hey, I'll take that. All right. Now, from there, in the next section, in verses 10 through 15, David travels to none other than the city of Gath. Now, does anybody remember who is from Gath? Goliath is from Gath. That's Goliath's hometown. It's also one of the five leading cities of the Philistines. So David leaves Nob, and where does he go? Enemy territory. Now, just think about it. Rhetorical question. Why would David flee to the Philistine countryside? Think about it. You got an answer? Because they're not going to look for him there. Makes perfect sense. If I go to Philistia, Saul's not going to find me there because nobody would think that the slayer of Goliath would end up in the city Goliath is from. Perfect sense. One problem with that. All the Philistines know who David is, and they recognize him rather quickly. Let's read it. All right, starting in verse number 10. And David rose and fled that day from Saul to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish, verse 11, said to him, listen to this. Is not this David? Look at what did they say? King of the land? Wait a minute now. Pause for a second. So even the Philistines know who's really in charge. It's not Saul, it's David. That's fascinating. Then listen to this. Did they not sing to one another of him in dances? Saul struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s. They even know the song the Israelites sung when the Israelites defeated them. What does this tell us? The Philistines are more up on what God is doing in Israel than Saul is. That's pretty bad. And David took these words to heart and was much afraid. Now, why is he afraid? Because they know who he is. King Achish could literally send him to prison, or worse, kill him. Because here's the mighty slayer of the Philistines in my court. So David's afraid. Verse 13. So he changed his behavior before them and pretended to be insane in their hands and made marks on the doors of the gate and let spittle run down his beard. Yeah, like a crazy person. Verse 14. Then Achish said to the servants, "Behold, you see this man is mad. Why then have you brought him to me?" Verse 15. "Do I lack madmen that you have brought this fellow to behave as a madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?" And the answer is basically, I got enough crazy folks already to deal with. I don't need one more Jewish crazy folk. Send him away. Right? So what happens? David runs. Chapter 22, verse 1, continues the story. David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's household heard it, they went down there to him. So they left their home in Bethlehem and found him in the cave of Adullam. And everyone who was in distress and everyone who was in debt and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him. And he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. That's one really big cave. Right? Assuming they were all in there. Now look what David does next. And David went from there to Mizpah of Moab. And he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me." In other words, if Saul is willing to kill me, he might be willing to kill my mom and dad too. So let me make sure they're out of sight, out of mind. Verse 4, almost done. And he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Verse 5, last one. Then the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. Now the forest of Hereth is kind of southwest of Jerusalem. It's a wilderness area, right? So what is David doing? David is going here and there and yonder and everywhere else, right? And so what we've seen today is David is doing whatever it takes to get away from Saul. Now, that's the story. And if this was a history class, we'd all pack up and you'd be at lunch at 11:41. Great job. But we're not in history class. And so that's why every Sunday we ask two things. What's the main idea? And how does this apply to my life? Right? And so we're going to kind of do that together as we look at three ideas that I think come out of this passage. Number one, here's the first one. I heard this. This is not new to me. I didn't come up with this. I heard this. I was scrolling through Facebook Reels this week, and another pastor or a preacher or Sunday school teacher or somebody came on and made this statement. And when I heard it, I immediately said, "Ooh, that's David." Here was the statement. Sometimes following God is hard. Sometimes following God is hard. Let's be honest, and this is with good reason, and this is not a knock on me or you or anybody else, but a lot of times, if we're not careful and don't give equal balance, we will only describe the Christian life like we do social media posts. Everything is great. I'm on top of the world. God's been good to me. Look, I've got my Bible open with my highlighter and coffee sitting out in the beautiful vista of my backyard where the birds are chirping and the squirrels are playing and all is right in the world, right? We rarely show the Facebook photo of us in the valley of the shadow of death with no Bible, no coffee, running on adrenaline and chocolate or whatever, you know, like monster energy drinks, right? Because our life has been turned upside down. But the reality is both things are true. The Christian life is the greatest journey of your life, and it is the greatest thing you can ever do is to give your heart and life to the Lord. It will literally change your life for eternity. But at the same time, sometimes following God is hard. Let me show you. All right, Ren, put up our map. All right. This is the map. You see all the red lines? That's all of David's journeys. He starts in Gibeah, goes to Ramah, goes back to Gibeah, goes to Nob, goes to Gath, then goes to Adullam, and then goes all the way. The map wouldn't let me. Anyway, he goes around the Salt Sea, Dead Sea, then comes back and ends up below Bethlehem in the forest. Now, I'm a nerd, so guess what I did? I used Google Maps, tried to figure out where all these places were, and then I saw how far it was. All of that just today, 323 miles. On foot. No, not even a donkey. On foot. Now, just for those of you who wonder, I did this as well because, again, I'm a nerd at times. This is about the same distance as walking from here to Nashville, Tennessee. And just like if you were to walk from here to Nashville, it's not all flat ground. For David, just to go from Adullam to Mizpah and back, David has to go 3,100 feet at its highest point, then has a 3,800 foot drop because by the time you get to the Dead Sea, it's 700 feet below sea level. Then on the other side, to get to Mizpah from the below 700 feet, you've got to climb 4,200 feet because Mizpah is like 3,500 feet. Then you got to do that same trek again in a very condensed space. Like it's not like gentle climb. You can go Google topographical map of Israel and you'll see on the right side where Mizpah, it goes from green to red really quick. And David just has to do all the, not to mention, beyond the physicality of the journey, not to mention, David has left everything. He's left his wife, his best friend, his career, his family, everything. And he didn't even do anything wrong. Right? Sometimes following God is hard. Now you say, well, Pastor, that's anecdotal. How do we know that's what David really thought about this journey? Glad you asked that question. Psalm 57, 4 says this. This is written during the period at some point when David is in the wilderness and he is being chased by Saul. We're not sure if it was exactly at this moment. He's chased by Saul for a number of chapters, so it could be anywhere in between while Saul's after him. All right, but look what he says. My soul is in the midst of lions. I lay down amid fiery beasts. The children of man, listen how he describes it, whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Verse 6. They set a net for my steps. My soul was bowed down. They dug a pit in my way, but they have fallen into it themselves, Selah. Now, another chapter, Psalm 142, also written during these wilderness periods of David's life. Look to the right and see. Listen, there is none who takes notice of me. No refuge remains to me. No one cares for my soul. How do you think David thought about this? This is hard. It stinks. And the reality is, sometimes following the Lord is difficult. But does that mean we should run from following the Lord just because it's difficulty? No. I quoted the great theologian Nick Saban last week. I will quote the other great theologian, Kirby Smart, this week. Sorry for those of you who are not Georgia fans. Here's what he said. He said, when you run from hard, more hard will find you. So it can be difficult following the Lord, or you can choose more difficulty not following the Lord. Following the Lord will be hard. I'm not going to lie. It will be hard. There will be times where it will be very difficult. But the alternative is much worse. On the other side of it, when we do hard things and we follow the Lord, we'll see at the end, we get to experience His greatest blessings and His greatest joy and see the Lord work in ways we never would have before. All right? So following the Lord sometimes is hard. Now, number two. You ready? Sometimes following God means adapting to change. First, what did David have to do? He had to leave his friend, his wife, and everything he knew to go to Nob. And he had to what? In that process, he had to adapt to change. When he got to Nob and he got his food and his swords, what did he have to do? Go to Gath. When he got to Gath and realized, oh, I'm not going to be able to hide out, what did he do? He adapted to the changing environment and acted like a crazy man. When he got to Adullam, he probably thought, hey, I'm just going to be able to hide out here. But who shows up? Mom and dad and family. Adapting to change. What does he do? Goes all the way to Moab. Comes all the way back. While he's at Adullam, who shows up? Who else shows up? 400 other guys. What does David do? Adapts to change. Hey guys, we'll be an army. I'll be your commander. Everybody, okay, you, all right, we're good. And then on his way back to Adullam, he gets intercepted by the prophet Gad, who says, hey bud, probably not a good idea to go back there. Should go somewhere else. What does he do? Adapts to change. Listen, the older we get, the less change we like. That was a great moment for all of us to go, amen. Because you don't have to tell me, I know you don't like change. Because there are times in my life where I don't like change. Listen, my father, love him to death. Great influence in my life. You want to get him started? You just want to hear my dad rant? Ask him about football uniforms changing. He hates it. My high school, Warner Robins High School, Warner Robins, Georgia, for decades, we were cardinal and white. But over the last 10 years, they've introduced some new uniforms. Black ones, gray ones. They have these black helmets or white helmets. You want to get my dad in a tizzy, just ask him about Warner Robins High School's gray and black uniforms. He can't stand them. You want to know why? Because it's change. I think the black ones look pretty sharp to me. Change. The older we get, the less we like change. But the reality is, sometimes when we're following the Lord, it requires us to adapt to change. I've been in churches that were resistant to change. Well, preacher, that ain't the way we do it around here. Right? We ain't never done it that way before. They're in my seat. I sat there when I was wee tall and my grandmother scratched my back. Who is that? We don't know them. Come on, we've all been there. I wrote this in my notes. So I want to say it to you. I will give y'all very good props. Y'all have not been like that, and I've been thankful. I've been in other churches who have been resistant to change, and it is difficult. But here's the reality. None of us rode up in a Model T today, did we? I bet every one of you's got a smartphone in your pocket. Well, except for Mr. Ronnie. Every one of you's probably got a smartphone in your pocket, right? Right? Is anybody going to go home and just not run their AC or heat? No. So the reality is, we do like some change, but we're resistant to change on other hands. And sometimes following the Lord is pushing us, pushing us, and pushing us to get out of our little comfort zone, Because there's something ahead that He wants us to do. Over the last several weeks, and we're working toward this, and we don't have all the answers yet, but Pastor Logan, myself, and Mercedes, we've been praying. We prayed this week specifically about lost people in our community, and we've been thinking and praying specifically about some things. Council said, hey, we want to focus on this year, and you know what? I don't know what that's going to look like some of the things that we want to focus on. I don't know exactly how we're going to accomplish those. I don't know exactly what those are going to look like, but I can tell you this. There's a very high likelihood it's going to look different than where we're at today. Because if you want to affect our 1, 2, and 3 mile radius around our church, then we got to do something. And that something is inevitably going to be different than something we're not doing right now. And it's going to create all of us an opportunity for all of us to adapt to change. Now, the reality is we can stay stuck in the mud and do nothing. And then we'll wither and die, and, you know, everything will, right? Or we can adapt to change like David did, and maybe, just maybe, experience the greatest blessings and greatest joys and greatest experiences of our life because we dare to follow God in the midst of change. Change is hard, but sometimes following God is hard. But here's the last thing that we see in this passage, that when we do follow the Lord and when we do adapt to change, that following God always means trusting in His sovereignty and His blessing. David never wavers from trusting the Lord and His greatness. David trusts in God's sovereignty and His hand of blessing to be with him throughout the chaos and turmoil of all of this wilderness journey. We know that because of Psalm 57. Let's go back there. Psalm 57:2, David says, I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills His purpose for me. Verse 3. He will send from heaven. Listen, He will send from heaven and save me. He will put to shame him who tramples on me. Selah. God will send out His steadfast love and His faithfulness. Now, last two, verses 9 and 10. I will give thanks to God, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praise to You among the nations for Your steadfast, Your covenant love. Your covenant love is great to the heavens, Your faithfulness to the clouds. Right? So what does David say? Hey, God, You got this. You have to have this because I don't. And even though it's hard and even though it desperately requires change in my life, I'm going to trust in Your sovereignty that you are on the throne, that You are doing what You do, and that my greatest blessing and my greatest joy will come if I just stick with You through this season of difficulty and this season of change, right? So, listen, I can promise you today that even if you are on the mountaintop with the Lord, that even if you are in the greatest season in your life, that there will be a season in the future at some point that difficulty will come and hard will come following the Lord. And it will require great change. Listen, some of you are, saw Josiah and Bailey come in. Guess what? A year ago, they weren't parents. Great change comes with being a parent, doesn't it? Right? Some of you are grandparents. You weren't grandparents a year ago, or you got more grandkids than you did a year ago. That requires great change because you got to remember more birthdays now. You got to buy more presents. Christmas is going to be a little bit bigger. Might have to get a bigger table. Right? Where will we be in 2 years, a year, 5 years? Who knows? I can guarantee you it will be great change between now and then. The question becomes, are we going to follow the Lord through the difficult, through the change, and experience His sovereignty and experience His hand of blessing, or are we not? And that's the choice we have to make each and every day. Am I going to keep on with the Lord, one foot in front of the other every day, no matter what comes, season of blessing, season of difficulty, valley of the shadow of death, mountaintop of greatness? Are we going to trust in His hand of sovereignty? Are we going to see His hand of blessing? And I hope you will. And I don't know where you're at this morning, but I know that somewhere in between is where each and every one of us are. And I hope you will do what David did. And I hope you will choose to follow the Lord's hand, to follow His hand of sovereignty, so you'll experience His hand of blessing and joy, whether it's hard, whether it takes change, or whether it doesn't. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.